Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody. This is Janine, and you're listening to Lunch with Loudon. Coffee Talk Radio shows are part of the Coffee Party Be the Media Project. You can join our team at www.coffeepartyusa.com/volunteer. There you go. So, happy first day of spring, everybody. Hey, Lynn, how goes it in Portland, India?
It's cloudy and cold up here. I had to actually put a cashmere sweater back on today because I've been thinking it's spring and dressing a little bit lighter, and I've just been cold. So spring is not here yet. I'm sorry. I don't care what you say. Okay, we've got a little more time.
Well, I've got a lot of daffodils up. They're one of the things the deer don't eat. And an Oregon spring is seldom warm, so I guess we'll get to talk about that some more. I do want to give a special shout-out today to my mom. Today she is 82 years old. This birthday is a gift. We didn't think we'd still have her. And so thanks, Vivian, for being with us, and keep on fighting like a girl. All right. Are we ready? By the way, I expected new music today, and I didn't hear it. What's with that?
I know. I don't know if you were noticing me in the chat room, but at the minute the music started, I typed in curse words, wrong opening. So I'll have to go back and figure out what I did wrong. We'll use it for the closing today.
Excellent. And so, everybody, we've had a lot of people call in for our song, and apparently Debbie Lynn acted. So let's get right to it because this is a subject near and dear to my heart. I'm going to briefly go over a little that some of you who may be in a position to read the blog post have heard, but let's get going. I know that I'm not the only one who thinks the whole idea of better living through chemistry has gone too far at the hands of the likes of Monsanto. And I hear a little amen. I may not be a sustainable living genius, but I do my part, and I'm a member of Be the Media, so my role in all this is to facilitate the conversation that just might make a difference for us all. As a matter of fact, I recently took a pledge at Small Planet Institute. Here's what I said. I pledge to bring public attention to our need to co-generate future food by providing access to good information about viable and sustainable solutions every one of us can implement in order to overcome the challenges created by the money and politics that favor corporate farming and agribusiness. The Monsanto Protection Act comes to mind. So today's show, Future Food, Local Solutions. What can we do as individuals and as members of a community to shift practices toward good food for healthy people? So we have amazing guests today. They include Albert Kaufman from Farm My Yard in Portland, Oregon. And you can learn more about his project on the web at farmmyyard.org and on Facebook at Farm My Yard. These are all posted in the Lunch with Loudon Facebook page, so if I'm talking too fast, you can't write it down, go check it out on the page. Also, Kate Wilbrick and Aaron Imhoff are from the Ingenuity Innovation Center in St. Helens, Oregon. You can learn more about their project at youringenuity.org and on Facebook at Ingenuity Innovation. Kate, Albert, Aaron, welcome to Lunch with Loudon.
Thank you. Thanks for having us. A small correction on the website is actually ingenuity.pro. youringenuity.com.
Oh,
are the
thank you,
two
thank you so
that
much.
Works. But thanks
I'm glad
for having
you did
us.
That. Oh, absolutely. It is my pleasure. It's our pleasure. So, as you know, Debbie Lynn and I are both deeply concerned about the quality of food we eat and how the choices made available to us kind of go uncontrolled by a regulatory process that the agribusiness has a lot more lobby say than we do. Let's lay the foundation for this discussion by asking the question, are you concerned about food today? If so, why? So let's go to Kate, then Aaron, then Albert.
Excellent. Yeah, we're definitely concerned about food. Each of us have been discussing lots of different concerns here at Ingenuity around where our food comes from. I know from my background, I've had several years of industry experience working in the food industry and have seen a lot of the practices there. And it's just been an interesting relationship with food as we've, certainly grown up. So a lot of the things that we've been mobilizing is, number one, kind of an education awareness about where does our food come from, and also the impact on all of the different systems to basically get food to your plate. So I know that's one of the areas that I'm really passionate about, and I'm sure that we'll be getting into that. But Aaron, do you have something else to chime in there?
I think, everything you've said is definitely right on with the way I think about it, and some of the major issues with, as you mentioned before, the better living through chemistry and the industrial agricultural complex through fossil fertilizers. How can we make better food even if our system is designed not to? That has always been an interest of mine. I love where this is going.
That's a good point. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good point, what you just said about the system is designed not to. And I hope what we'll eventually get to today is how we can alter that system at a personal, community, local level. So, Albert, how about you?
Yeah. Am I concerned about food? There's an interesting way that I feel like the word concern kind of sets me off in the wrong direction. Like, I'm so far beyond concern. Like, I think we're all hyper aware of, problems in our local food system, in our national food system, and in our international food system. And the way these kind of issues sort of stack up, and combine with climate change, population growth, and things like that. It's like I was concerned a long time ago. I think at this point I'm just really into the action steps. And I think the more I talk about actionable steps that we take to bring everybody along to a more food secure future and to just, better food and organic food and solutions, that's just really what interests me with my time. I mean, anybody that I talk to that isn't concerned, I just is not awake, is not aware of what's really going on around them. And, that's part of the issue for sure, that people are still eating fast food, that people are still putting as much, corn syrup into their food, and just that the food supply that we have, generally feeds our country, and beyond, is just so out of sync and so out of whack with what's actually healthy for our own bodies as well as our climate and our planet and other species that, I just want to kind of move us forward into the discussion of how do we quickly transition into back towards something that we all used to do, that our grandparents did and our great grandparents, which was grow our own food. And so, yeah, I'm concerned, and I'm more interested in what are the solutions and how do we get there quickly.
Well, that's excellent. I like your sort of reference to Back to the Future, because in a lot of ways, that's exactly what we're thinking people can do. Although, I think modern techniques are sometimes different than what they used to be, but we'll get to that. Why don't you kick us off then, Albert, and say, what action are you up to, and how does it fit into this bringing us back into compliance or harmony with healthy eating and for both the planet and the species?
Sure. Well, I think, one of the things, I'm 52 now, and I think one of the ways that I'm kind of growing up or coming to a greater understanding about my world and my place in it is about localizing everything. And, the closer things are to me, the less I have to get into a car or have things brought to me, via some kind of fossil fuel transportation means, the better for everybody, for everything. So if I'm growing my own food in my yard, or if I'm, you know, sourcing my tomatoes from the person who lives across the street, I live in an urban setting. So this is, you know, particularly an urban viewpoint. But, you know, as much as I can bring my world and my activities into a small radius around me that I can either walk to or bike to or, you know, once in a while use a vehicle, the better off everybody is. And so that's my opinion. And so I'm starting this organization called Farm My Yard. It's not really an organization as much as a method of helping people connect with one another and share resources. So there's been lots of ideas like this along the way. There's something called backyard sharing. There's, you know, all over the world, many people already do this. If you look at the system of the Moshav in Israel, where, you know, a community exists and each person's backyard is there to monocrop a particular thing. So one person grows avocados, the person next to them is growing cows, the person next to them is growing sunflowers. And at the end of the season or along the way, you know, people share with each other, but also the collective sells their produce in a local market. And that's kind of what I'm going for with Farm My Yard, you know, a way where a person who's a homeowner takes a sign, puts it in their yard, says, you know, admits to the world, okay, I'm tired of a leaf blowing my yard. I'm tired of weed whacking it. I'm tired of pouring chemicals onto a lawn that, you know, is some kind of outdated, outmoded system that we inherited from the French of, you know, 200 years ago. And instead, I'd rather see an effort, you know, to grow vegetables or grow something that's not going to need that kind of maintenance. And then that sign indicates to anybody that's walking around that perhaps lives in one of our new, you know, high-rise apartment buildings who has some urban gardening skills or some interest in learning to do urban gardening or just learn how to, you know, and or make some money at it. So those two parties come together and then, you know, they work together to form an agreement that will make sense for them. And I just got an email from somebody who used this system last year along Hawthorne in Portland, Oregon. And, you know, she wrote back and she said, well, this worked and this didn't and this worked and this didn't. And if I was going to do it again, I would do it this way. And there is no one recipe for how something like Farm My Yard will unfold. And I think the folks at the Ingenuity Center would probably agree that every time you do an action in this world, like, first of all, many people are very new to the concept of growing your own food. We've really lost touch with that. You know, I mean, we're all good at throwing some seeds out there and maybe seeing some wildflowers come, but to actually grow food takes a little bit more effort and intention. And, you know, for me, when I started Farm My Yard, I knew right off the bat that there were just going to be 1,000 different relationships that could happen, you know, good and bad. I mean, someone knocking on your door and you feeling uncomfortable and going like, oh, well, no, I don't want to work with you. So, it's, you know, it's learning relationship skills. It's learning communication skills. It's learning more, you know, boundary setting. So many of us have difficulty in some of these areas. So it's almost like a personal growth movement in a way to try to, you know, invite somebody into your life that you don't have a relationship with and that you're suddenly about to start, you know, an endeavor that could lead to, it's almost like, you know, a partnership. I mean, it could be a financial partnership. There could be friendship. One of my yards that's being farmed, the farmer has become really good friends with the family whose yard he's farming. They go bowling together. They share food. They share recipes. So this can lead to something that's quite fantastic, and it could also lead to something that doesn't work out. You know, someone can start farming your yard and decide that they need to move. And so I forget what the original question was, but there's my take.
No, that's all good. Well, one thing I want to sort of pick up on that you just said was that it's relationship and interaction and communication, because one of the things that intrigues me about Farm My Yard is that there are a lot of people who are willing to say, I would love to have a garden. I would love to grow things. You know, they have great intention. Maybe they've sort of moved through the same personal growth steps that the rest of us have gone through in terms of identifying food as so key. And yet they've got jobs and families and obligations. And, you know, if they get tomatoes in a pot, they're feeling pretty powerful, you know. And so what mm-hmm. I liked about what you were talking about is that someone else could come do that in their space, and yet they get part of the harvest. They get to participate in any way they negotiate with their farmer. So I think it's very win-win because, as much as when I was running my own company, I worked 70 to 80-hour weeks. I know I didn't grow a garden then. And this is the opportunity. You know, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, someone might farm their own yard. But this is a wonderful way to make that transition.
Absolutely. And it's also, you know, everybody's talking about the economy and the recession. You know, any young person, anybody that's got any energy and, you know, muscle to put into this could be starting up their own small business very, very quickly. As you said, there are many people who are interested in having their yard farmed. And on the Farm My Yard website, there is a downloadable document that anybody who has, you know, the ability can customize and can walk around their neighborhood and introduce themselves to their neighbors. You know, go find the place that's got the sun and go and talk to that neighbor and say, you know, I will help you remove the grass here, and we'll put in a garden and we'll share the profits from the vegetables, or we'll just share the bounty. And I really see this as like a little jobs program or big jobs program as well. Because if people, there's quite a number of schools here that teach young people how to do some gardening. And if kids in high school took this program and ran with it, they could be earning their college tuition. They could be earning money to pay for, you know, other things that they need. And I see so many young people who are just like twirling around in circles trying to figure out, okay, well, I need a summer job. I need, you know, I really would like to make some money this summer. And there's only so many lifeguarding, camp counselor, you know, jobs out there, or jobs at fast food restaurants, you know, which is not a place that you really want to spend your summer vacation away from school. You know, instead, I really encourage young people, particularly because they've got a lot more strength than I do at 52. You know, I'm still going to be doing this for a while, but, you know, many of them could be stepping into this and getting themselves into business. And, you know, if you farm 4 or 5 yards, you've got yourself produce to sell at a farmer's market. You can set up a CSA. Or you could just be feeding a whole bunch of people and having them pay you directly. So,
I don't know if you saw on the Lunch with Bob and Facebook page, but one of the things I posted getting ready for this show is called the Warning Signs of Gardening. And it's 1 in 5 teenagers will experiment with farming. And it goes through all the signs, like digging is a gateway to gardening. And it's kind of funny because it's done like one of the posters to warn parents about, you know, marijuana or huffing or something. And I thought it was so cute because it was, I hope people will take a time to look at it because I thought it was so innovative. And it's right along the line with you saying it's like, hey, this could be a summer job. But you also focused on the word transition. And I think that Kate and Aaron can really speak to people transitioning. Isn't that a lot about what the Ingenuity Innovation Center is about? It's helping people go from point A to point B in terms of their relationship to food.
Oh, absolutely. We see so much of this. So first of all, we focus in on aquaponic solutions. So this is really working with nature where we have our fish that excrete in the water beds, and as a result, we see plants that grow in half the time. And the aquaponic system has been an incredible tool and teacher in that we ask the question, wow, if everybody had their needs met, what would abundance look and feel like? And we can clearly see that with the aquaponics greenhouse where we do tours regularly. In fact, we have one coming up this Saturday from 3 to 5. And word is just getting out about, you know, this, first of all, the aquaponics system, but it ties into all sorts of other different sustainable solutions that we hold space for. So we essentially just put it out there and say, hey, what would you like to create? We have some tools, we have some space. Let's take a look at this and creating a learning opportunity for us to just discover, you know, how to work together. So this ties in so beautifully with what Albert has been talking about, and we're just a big fan of his work because we need these different kinds of discovery pathways, whether you're in an urban or a rural environment. And the connection to food, especially when we do our meet and greets or any kind of activity that we put on here at Ingenuity, food seems to be the great connector. And the great thing is that, you know, when we're taking people out into the greenhouse and showing them where we get our vegetables and then putting it into, you know, a meal and talking about the recipes, this incredible rich conversation comes out and people automatically have something to connect over. Then when we get into the projects where it might be a little bit more uncomfortable, where we have folks from all sorts of different disciplines, different backgrounds, different generations, that's where it gets into some really fun areas where you're kind of working outside of your comfort zone to discover some of this. But that's the beauty. That's the aha moment that we've certainly been creating. And it opens up people's minds to not only explore some of these tough questions, but be curious enough and also step into a space of vulnerability to try something new. So that's one exciting, you know, aspect that I see through my lens here, and certainly as it pertains to food, people start making the connections between when I make a choice in a supermarket, how does my choice impacts things, whether it's a local farmer or a large manufacturing company that makes food and the transportations and supply chains to support it. People are now starting to critically think more about that, and that's what we're all about.
Oh, that's amazing. I posted a meme also on the Lunch with Loudon Facebook page, and it says, if you stop spending money at the grocery store next week, they would never even notice you were gone. If you took a small fraction of that money and spent it at the farmer's market, you would help a local farmer pay the rent. You might even save his farm. And I think that's part of the choices that you're talking about. It's like it's kind of like turning the Titanic, you know, to have the whole food economy be different than it is today. But it's almost nothing to take the first step. And whether it's shopping at a farmer's market or buying from one of the kids who does urban farming or going to a class out at the Ingenuity Innovation Center to help you sort of see how to get from here to there. I think that there's a lot of people pushing on the side of that big boat to try to get it to turn. So, Aaron, do you have something to chime in about this?
Well, you know, just a little bit about what Albert was talking about, how, you know, these could be the little changes that we make, and that I believe you even mentioned something along those lines, too, that we kind of made these changes out of having to. You know, we both kind of lost jobs, and we both knew that there was something different that we wanted to do with our lives, something that felt more like giving back instead of working in a cubicle. And so that's kind of what opened the door for us, is to just go out and try and fail, but succeed through failing. And that's kind of how we have this today. We've totally bootstrapped everything we're doing. And that's another thing I love about the Farm My Yard is it's, you know, it's this space that's right in front of you that you're just not even thinking is could do something for you. But yet it has all this potential, and it has all this potential to bring the community together. And that's amazing. You know, that's where we really grow. When we have a healthy, striving community together, we really are unstoppable.
Oh,
you know,
like that. Go ahead.
I want to just piggyback on something that Aaron was talking about, and actually just sort of highlight the work that they're doing at the Ingenuity Center. You know, in my effort to try to get urban farming really kickstarted and going, you know, everywhere, one of the things that's really needed on a big level is training. And, you know, Kate and Aaron are offering people ongoing training at their center. And, you know, my thought is, I've been thinking about this for a couple of years. We were pushing back against a land use change that a local golf course wanted to make. The Colwood Golf Course in Portland wanted to, they were going for an industrial designation so that they could build more industrial, you know, land instead of having a golf course. And many of the people in Portland, particularly in that area where there aren't very many parks, pushed back and said, no, we want to keep the designation open space. And we ended up winning, and the golf course is still sitting there being a golf course that's not really making much money, and the people who own it are kind of upset. But during that time, one of the things that we were sort of hoping for, a number of us, was to get an urban farming training institute going. And you know, I had this dream that we start turning places like shopping malls and abandoned schools into just that, places where anyone who's interested could come and take courses in urban farming. And, you know, I think that's one of the missing pieces that I talked about before, that there's lots of people who are like, yes, farm my yard. And I'm hoping that, you know, those urban farmers who, you know, aren't at capacity already will see the sign and take the bait and go ahead and run with it. But what's really needed is a lot more training for all of us to learn, you know, and there's tons of YouTubes online. I mean, you could just spend your whole day kind of getting training that way, but there's definitely something to be said for actually getting your hands in the dirt and doing it. And there's some great programs around Portland where that's happening. PSU has got a great program. There's the, you know, Crops Farm out in the Cully neighborhood where, you know, they've got a couple acres and people can go out there and take classes. But I see this as really the whole, you know, country, if not the world, needs to start, like, getting into the idea of everybody learning how to garden. It's not, you know, that word concern that you mentioned before is kind of coming to my mind again. And it's almost like, you know, if we're going to take the next step past concern, then just everybody has to get that on their resume. It has to be taught at all ages in school. I mean, that would actually probably do it. If all ages in school just had an hour-long, you know, gardening class every day, if that was just part of the curriculum. I mean, we could tie it in with nutrition when it's cold out. You could be studying why it's better to eat carrots, you know, or, you know, how food combining works, or fermentation or canning and preserving, that kind of thing. But, I mean, that just has to get into the curriculum. I mean, it would probably take care of the obesity problem at the same time. It's just a super win-win situation. So I think, you know, getting the training going, and the Ingenuity folks are, you know, right at the forefront of that. And I hope that they figure out a way to both monetize what they're doing as well as expand it, because I think the world is really starved for the training of, you know, new urban farmers, new farmers in general. You know, when you look at the statistics of how old farmers are in our country, there's, I think the average age is 60. Now, I know at 52 that I'm not going to want to be spending 4 to 8 hours a day farming, but, you know, I might have to. But definitely people who are in their 20s and 30s, you know, who have a little bit more energy, and if they want to get in shape, skip the gym membership, become an urban gardener.
Well,
you know?
And I just have to, I just want to do a little pushback here with you, Albert, Stubby Lynn, because, you know, I grew up, I'm the granddaughter of a Kansas wheat farmer. And great-grand, you know, my great-grandparents actually are the ones who homesteaded there. And I don't want to be an urban farmer. I'm looking into aquaponics a little bit because it seems like it's the least amount of time possible. But I really want to form partnerships with other people who want to grow food, because I have a very black thumb and really no interest in plants other than I like cooking. So,
well, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, so I'm hearing you talk about having to spend hours a day. I'm like, well, hell no, I'm not going to do that. That's not me.
Well, definitely not, Debbie Lynn. And, you know, again, it's also part of our aging thing, too. As we get older, we're probably all a lot less interested in working with our hands and doing manual labor, you know, the older we get as well. But, mm-hmm. And maybe it's not for you, and maybe it's not for half the people. But, you know, there's definitely a large swath of our population that's A, looking for work, B, capable of doing this kind of thing, C, you know, like a huge drain on other kinds of resources, let's say unemployment, let's say healthcare. And so it's, you know, it's just making the equation work. Okay, you know, person who's available for this plus training, actual effort and, you know, involvement equals the result of, you know, possibly healthier food, healthier person, less health care needed, just, you know, healthy. And that's part of the reason that we're all doing this, too, is to be healthier.
Yeah.
We're eating organic food because it makes us feel better, because it's better for us. And, yes,
oh,
I agree, this is not going to be for everyone.
Well, there's an interesting thing that you sort of alluded to there, which is kind of like when you start talking about manual labor, and I think sometimes, you know, I'm a child of the 60s, and we all went back to the land, and that's when I learned what I didn't know about the land, because I've been a gardener all my growing up years, and I'll tell you, working the land and gardening are different. But one of the things that intrigues me about the Ingenuity Innovation Center is that it embraces, and I hope Kate and Erin, you'll speak to this, it embraces kind of new age farming. You know, not all growing of things requires, you know, little house on the prairie techniques, you know what I'm saying? I was very young when I went back to the land. I worked very hard. It was physically stressful. But I think aquaponics and hydroponics and some of the things we've learned in the last 40 years since I was there back on the land are amazing. And so maybe Erin or Kate, you could speak to that a little bit.
Well, yeah, you know, aquaponics is, in our system, we have a 1,500 square foot greenhouse that's only halfway built out at the moment. So it's about just over 700 square feet of growing space. And we literally only need to spend about 15 minutes a day in the greenhouse. And that's just maybe doing a little weeding. All of our beds and benches are at waist level, so you're not bending over. So it's very easy for anyone of all ages to spend time in there and really benefit. I really think that there's almost like a therapeutic aspect to these greenhouses because they're just full of life. There's full of little insects, you know. We never really worried about the insects. We had people come up and say, oh, no, you have aphids. And, you know, we kind of waited and waited, and sure enough, here come the ladybugs and here come the spiders, really. And they...
Yes, spiders.
Yeah, they keep the aphids down. And then all of a sudden we had caterpillars, and caterpillars can really do damage. I mean, they can eat a whole plant in a day, it seems like. And just when I got to the point of like, oh, no, what should I do? Here come the wasps. And the wasps eat the caterpillars like how a spider eats a bug. They literally suck them dry. And that blew my mind, you know, letting nature take its course and not having me need to really control it so much. So another aspect of aquaponics is we don't really add any fertilizer to the system. It's all from the fish. There are a few trace elements that we can't get, but we've found some really unique ways to get them in. One of them being iron, and we have a well, so we can pump our iron-rich well water into the system to supplement the iron. And then there's other things like dolomite, which is a nutrient-rich, pretty much like rock dust that you can add to your system that takes care of it. And you can choose to go really high-tech with these systems. We are in the process of trying to automate a lot more of our systems as far as having an in-greenhouse computer that would basically send information to your cell phone anywhere you are. You can actually make decisions from your cell phone. But at the same time, you don't need to do those things. It can be very, very low-tech. It almost feels like low-tech is the new high-tech in a way. We stopped, you know, testing for pH because just spending enough time with the fish, I literally can dip my hand in the water and I can tell you what the pH is just from doing it for so long. I do bite my nails, so that does expose that membranous tissue under your nail. And that,
yes,
that's the indicator. I can tell you right where the pH is by how bad it burns.
Excellent, excellent. Well, and from both of you, I'm getting the notion that we're kind of all falling forward together. You know, when a child learns to walk, they're actually standing and falling, and standing and
Absolutely.
Falling, and standing and falling. And so we're all kind of moving in our levels of understanding and sophistication together, which is, you know, Albert referred to it when he talked about, you know, this is really a relationship and a communication business, this gardening stuff, this urban farming. And you do training and education out at your center. And I've heard you say before, you learn as much from other people as they learn from you. And, of course, Debbie Lynn and I are here today to try to sort of help people understand that the possibilities are almost endless in terms of how they can participate in creating the food supply that they desire, whether it's letting someone else farm your land or whether it's as a matter of fact, you guys at Ingenuity have, it's almost like a home terrarium system that, you know, most people can't even keep up with in terms of how much food it can produce. Do you want to speak to that for just a minute?
Yeah, we have it's a basement setup, and it's very small. It's only about 28 square feet of grow space. And there are 13 fish that feed that system. And it's kind of a new setup for us because they're the first time we actually have male and female fish in the same tank. In our greenhouse, we only have a population of male fish. And that's pretty common in agriculture, or I mean in aquaculture, because the males, they grow bigger faster, so they produce more money faster. So a lot of aquaculture people like to only grow male fish. And we kind of want to move into being more sustainable. So our basement setup is going to be our future beginning hatchery where we can begin to breed our own fish. But there's a wonderful woman that is actually trying to patent her aquaponic system right now, and it's called, I believe, Portable Farms. And she's done a lot of the research that we've kind of piggybacked on, and she's come up with a lot of these numbers. 25 square feet is enough of a grow space to feed one person. And so kind of
wow.
Thinking about those numbers, it's really interesting. We decided to take her data and apply it to all the arable land on the planet on a single story, and we discovered that if we planted all the arable land in aquaponics, looking at the world's population, we actually could feed about 1,000 planets of our population. And that's only on a single
wow.
story. So now if we began to think about skyscraper ability, we almost have like a galaxy potential on this one planet to feed everybody. So I don't know, it's kind of a tangent there, getting away from the basement setup. But yeah, that basement setup, we definitely can't keep up with it. And it was our first setup. It's over a year old now, and it's thriving.
And out of this, this is where the opportunities are opening up, not just for me and Aaron and people here that are involved with Ingenuity, but it's creating new emerging markets. And one of the things that we're really excited about is, as we've been kind of coming up with it and trying out different DIY designs around aquaponics, we're coming out with kit designs. And they could be, you know, something super low-tech that anybody could go out, and we certainly want to make the plans available for people to learn how to build their own, or they can get a turnkey solution. And it could be as simple or as fancy as you want, and that's where we see our artists and our craftspeople coming together and folks that love to do this and want to see it get out. So just even in alignment with where Albert's bringing the energy in with people that love to get their hands dirty doing some of this traditional gardening, which I think is very therapeutic, and I don't ever see that going away. I know I could never convince my dad, who's an avid gardener, to switch on over solely to aquaponics, because this is what brings him joy, is doing a lot of that traditional, you know, gardening. But the thing is that there's something for everybody. And that's the one thing that we have really tried to stay true to with Ingenuity is creating an open source center where we can move out information that meets people regardless of where they're at in life and also where they're at, you know, financially, what they can be able to do and afford. And then having a community there that you can mobilize, hey, I don't know how to do this, I'm scared, I've never tried something like this. That's okay, we have people there that can step into that space and make it a lot less scary.
I love this whole sense of community that when Albert speaks, when you speak, when Aaron speaks, you definitely get that this is more than just Kate, this is more than just Janine, you know, taking a hoe to the ground and putting some seeds in, that this is really, I like the sense of movement and community that we're getting from this. And so there's other ways also. I don't know if you sell any of the things on your property, or Albert, I don't know if you're actually... A Saturday market or a farmer's market person in addition to being a grower. But, you know, just by inviting people to farmer's markets and having them purchase in support of sort of this movement is a huge contribution to the conversation we're all able to have together. And it also causes things to change in the world around us. I think, has anyone heard about Seattle, I guess, in 2009, changed their city ordinances in such a way that people could plant in their parkway, that place between the sidewalk and the street. Mm-hmm. And so even though you're responsible for that place, and but you don't really own that place, you know, it's a part of an easement. So there's a big plant your parkway movement going on in Seattle right now. And if you go online and Google for it, you'll see. Go ahead.
I call that the planting strip.
The planting strip. There you go, instead of the parking strip. I like that a lot. And we got a lot of response from people who are responding and saying, yes, we're going to plant in our planting strip. Thank you for the correction. And then also there's, I don't know if either one of you participate in a CSA, a community-supported agriculture project, where you pay a subscription and you get 6 months basically of a harvest season of whatever is grown by that local grower. And I was surprised to find out, I just did research on this, it's from $400 to $600 for 6 or 7 months of produce. That's mm-hmm. amazing. So do you contribute to anything like that at Ingenuity, or do you, Albert, and in your urban farming?
Well, I know for us, we've stumbled upon a totally new emerging space that we had no idea about called, what is it called, Aaron? It's the...
It's a food bank, really. A food club.
Yes, a food club. And so this is all locally sourced food and organizations that focus in on GMO-free and organic products. So this woman just created this wonderful opportunity for herself where she went out, sourced all these different kinds of companies that were in alignment with their missions and said, okay, well, we'll put a local food club together where people can pay a certain annual membership, and the way that they get the discounts is because they have the volume. And
yes.
It's proved to be a wonderful opportunity to not only get the local organic produce and also, you know, proteins, but it's also provided us a new gateway for us to be able to bring our products to market. And not having, as we're going through, you know, our growing curve and learning what's working, what's not working in aquaponic system, we're not committing to, you know, setting up our own CSA where we're saying we can deliver X amount of pounds of produce and boxes, you know, because we're still discovering what really works well in our aquaponic system. So that's one thing that we've seen, emerge through there. And out of that, we're hoping to see our aquaponic kits that we're now bringing to market for around $1,200, which, you know, it only takes two of them a month when we sell them to keep me and Aaron on board full-time with this project. So we'd love to be able to see more of the kits getting out there. In fact, we just are getting a new kit out to one of the northeast neighborhoods in Portland, which we can certainly make that information available so people can check in and see how would you do a little aquaponic system out in your front yard and what are the challenges and pros and cons with it. So we're excited to see, you know, where all of this can take us, and I think it's a both and for everything that we're working on.
Yeah,
Go ahead.
In terms of, like, from my yard, you know, where money comes in and goes out and things. I think we'll be probably having a T-shirt coming up soon where people can buy the T-shirt, and it'll probably be at cost just to get the word out. And I have had the idea of, you know, creating actual signs that people can buy, and I would either send them or they could download them. There's a downloadable version on the farmmyyard.org website. In terms of CSAs, we've got a number of people who have used the Farm My Yard process, have, like, accumulated enough yards that they are then offering CSAs both to the people who are within the group that's being farmed, but also beyond that. So Justin who started a, his company now is called In Town Ag, and you can visit his website, intownag.com. And if you're in the Portland area, you'll see him at the Portland Farmers Market, the St. John's Farmers Market, and one other one, Mont Villa as well, plus his CSA. And so he is one example of somebody who's just taking it and running with it. And then myself, I'm actually not really involved in a CSA. I have a close friend who runs a farmers market, so there's lots of vegetables running through my life. And I've also just recently moved, so I'm sort of re-establishing myself in Southeast Portland, where I'm not really feeling like I need to figure out exactly what CSA to be involved in, because I'm part of a community garden that grows a lot of food, and I also garden around the house where I am. So personally, I'm not needing that, but I'm trying to build a community where there is a lot of CSAing going on just right in the local area, and food buying clubs and that type of thing. So that's definitely happening. And I think anybody that sort of starts now doing the farming in my yard as an urban farmer could very easily create a CSA probably by the end of their first season. So I kind of come back to the economics of it in the urban setting, that whether, you know, you're using aquaponics or you're using someone's yard or you're using various combinations, there are jobs, basically. This is a job building and food creating program. I mean, so that's, I'm just super excited about it. As I was saying to you yesterday when we talked on the phone to kind of think about this talk show today, I was walking down the street yesterday just looking at the various yards I was walking by and just going ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching. Instead of seeing grass, I was seeing money signs. And I think, you know, when I've traveled through Europe and I've seen what people do over there, they're saving money by growing their own food. And I think it's just a matter of time until it just catches on like wildfire here. And I'm excited. I'm going to go talk to the Neighborhood Association in a neighborhood in Portland called Selwood. And it sounds like there's quite a lot of people there who would like to do this on a mass scale. And my expectation is, you know, we've all seen these memes of, you know, Sweden kind of figuring out how to turn a whole neighborhood into a sharing system, and how Russia grows, you know, 70% of the vegetables are grown by individuals in their own homes. And I think when one neighborhood in Portland or wherever suddenly decides, okay, we're going to be it, and it starts taking off, this thing is just going to catch on like wildfire, and I really expect that it will transform, continue to transform, because we're already transforming, that it will continue to transform our country. And I may even save, you know, give us a few more extra years to try to save our species and perhaps a couple others on the planet. Because also bees, you know, which we all count on so much, it turns out that they do really good in urban environments. And the reason is because there's a lot less pesticides being used, and there's a lot more diversity of the crops being grown. So the more urban gardening we can get going, the more of a chance that we'll be able to pollinate the rest of our food.
Oh, that's excellent. That's excellent. Now, yeah. It just so happens that everyone on the call today is on the show is from Oregon. But there are ways, regardless of where you live in America, to find things like CSAs. I found one site called localharvest.org. And I posted that on the Lunch with Loudon Facebook page. And basically all over America, you can click and find a farm, a farmer's market, a restaurant, a CSA. And so it'll help you sort of try out this option of maybe you're not going to provide the labor, but maybe you'll fund by purchasing through farmer's markets or through the CSA. And I checked it out by looking for the CSAs in my community, and sure enough, they were there. So I hope you have as good a luck as I did in trying that out. And I'm so encouraged, because it sounds like, you know, to have a basement aquaponics setup, you can be a homeowner and farm your yard, and you can be, you know, you can do your gardens in pots, and you can do your gardens in greenhouses, and you can support one another in doing this. So it's very exciting. And I think the other thing we haven't touched on so much is that we talked about the desirability of organic foods, and we talked a little bit about the desirability of avoiding GMOs. But one thing I remember from my days back at the EPA long, long ago was that the most beautiful lawn in the world will turn out to be one of the greatest polluters in the community, and that's because of a thing called non-point source pollution, which is all the runoff that comes off these plants that are used to cultivate. They use a lot of fertilizers, a lot of herbicides, sometimes even pesticides to keep those lawns beautiful, and then that just sort of washes through the soil and gets into the wastewater system and gets dumped in the river and causes all kinds of downstream problems. So not only are we creating something that's desirable when we take this on, we're also not creating something that's less desirable. And so it's also a win-win. So we have...
Yes.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, total cost analysis, you know, when we really look at the total cost of something instead of just the immediate return, I think we're really thinking about the environment. So I just wanted to piggyback on what you were saying there, that when we make an action, we definitely need to think about the actions, you know, seven generations from now of that action.
Yes.
Right on.
Yes, and I think, I think it was you, who knows which one of us it was now, but at the beginning said, you know, when you even consider the cost of what it costs to drive that corn from Kansas to Oregon, you know, in
right.
the fossil fuel cost and the pollution cost from having done that trucking and the roads you have to maintain because all of these trucks are driving through thousands of miles, you know, we're getting our tomatoes from Guadalajara, you know, and our strawberries from I don't know where. In the Yucatan Peninsula or something. It's like bringing it home makes a lot of sense in a lot of ways.
Absolutely. Well, we had a, you know, just to chime in, there's just one thing that just is, you know, eating at me. We were talking with a tour that we recently had out, and there was a gentleman that was explaining that, you know, a local supermarket here would buy apples, and they're starting to get more and more like local fresh fruits and vegetables in the marketplace, which is a wonderful thing. So people and local farmers are supported. But he informed me that the apples that they were buying from Washington got trucked all the way down to California to be put in plastic bags and then put back on a truck to be shipped back up for distribution. And that's the kind
wow.
of stuff that, you know, really asking some of these questions and learning about the supply chain, you know, and all of these different handoff points, the more that we can be educated about that, again, the smarter choices and decisions that we're going to make about this. So, you know, that's where what I love and what we're all creating is when we have a relationship with a local farmer, a local CSA, we can ask these questions and understand all of the different parts and pieces that go into that, where we may not have that opportunity working with some of the bigger box grocery stores.
And I think it. I think when you start, I think I saw a YouTube video one time about what that trip from the Washington apple grower to the California packager back to the Portland market has a huge environmental footprint, a fossil fuel footprint, and plus those guys who are packing those apples could have been people here with jobs. So I think there's a lot to be said for bringing it in, you know, bringing it close, and that also increases the possibility or your confidence that, yes, this is a local product, yes, this is an organically raised product, yes, this is a GMO-free product, because you know, you see the guy who grew it, or you know that farm. You've passed it on, you know, on a road trip somewhere, and you've seen it there. And I think that's also important. So we have just a few minutes left. I'd love to give everybody a last chance to sort of let America know what it is you'd like them to know from a conversation like this. So let's start with Albert. Give you a minute or two, minute and a half.
Okay, sure. So come to the website, farmmyyard.org, and sign up for our newsletter, and go ahead and read just the first top part of what it is that we're up to. If you read through that, that should give you a really good idea of some ways that you can turn your yard into a small farm. Stop pouring chemicals onto your yard and make some new friends, form a new relationship. And if you are someone who has any interest at all in growing food, if you don't have enough money, if you don't have enough food, if you are just clueless as to what you're going to do next with your life, go ahead and download the document that's on FromMyYard.org. Look at it, customize it, make it your own. Put your picture on there, put your phone number on there, and walk your block and try putting that out to the universe that you are interested in doing some gardening, because that will lead to food coming towards you. That will lead to possibly income coming towards you. It will definitely lead to new skills coming towards you. And you'll probably be a healthier, happier person, and the person whose yard you're going to farm will be ecstatic about it as well. So this can work, and I look forward to hearing from people who have any questions about it or have any successes with it.
Thanks. Hey, Kate, how about you?
Yeah.
Well, I just want to say thank you for inviting us on the show. This has been such a great conversation, and we love just sharing what we've been discovering, and we know that we can't do it alone. This is definitely a community endeavor. I know for us, we are looking at bringing out the aquaponic technology and getting it into people's hands regardless of, you know, where you're at, what you're doing. One of the things that we are definitely asking for is a GoPro, so that way we can record all of the different types of things that we're building here and getting it online, getting it accessible for people, and then also having a community together of different folks from different backgrounds that can help people troubleshoot and create systems of their own. So, again, our website is www.ingenuity.pro. We are looking to get the kits out, so if there's interest there that you want to participate, we have some special deals going on with that. Other than that, we have wonderful events that we bring the community together around and have all sorts of different ways that we ask people to get involved with. So check us out. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to get connected and hear what we can do to make things easier as we go through the shift together.
Thanks. Erin, how about you?
I couldn't have said it better. Again, I guess I would just say thank you. And it's always fun to share. And I think that's what really energizes me is helping others. So, you know, we sell kits, but at the same time, we also want to give this technology away. We want to help you do it. If you're going to do it, we want to make ourselves available to answer questions to help get this information out there. Because I think that's the point. It's not so much that we're, you know, I guess in this society we should be focused on money, but I think we could see a change in society by freeing everyone. And this is one of those ways to do it. You can definitely get yourself off of Safeway, that addiction that we all have. So, yeah, I think
exactly.
It's just wonderful to change the world with these little micro steps that we can do by growing our own food. I think by we're seeing in technologies that we're going to be making our own power and all these little things that we can do, we're taking the macro down to the micro scale. And I just love being a part of it. So, again, thanks for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. And thanks to all of our guests. This has been so much fun. And I hope this is just the beginning of a conversation for all of us about how you step by step walk away from that which you might not prefer and towards that which you desire. So a little housekeeping for everybody. Coffee Party USA is a totally crowdfunded organization. Citizens United has not benefited us. So to become a voting member or to donate, go to www.coffeepartyusa.com. It'll be very clear, the button to push. One of the things we buy with your contributions is airtime. Blog Talk radio shows are happen 4 times a week. Sundays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, Progressive Politics, Tennessee Style with Bud Fields. Mondays, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, Press 1 for Democracy with Dan Aronson. Thursdays, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, here you are, Lunch with Loudon. And Saturdays, 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Pacific, Politics Inc. All of our guests for being with us today. I want to thank all of you for listening. And above and beyond it all, coffee party on.
Thank you, everybody.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Aloha.
Yeah, I didn't mention to say thanks, but that was really awesome. Nice to hear you guys, Aaron and Kate. Yeah.